Hi, it's Diane. It is Wednesday, May 9th. I'm here with a 3 o'clock group. So far we have Joy and Farah and Catherine. Let's start with check-ins and celebrations. Who's going to kick us off?
Well, this is Catherine. Tyler has gotten his homework turned in. From last week. So, yay.
Yay.
He doesn't like to do it, but, you know, like, if you want credit, you have to turn it in. So, yeah.
That's, okay. Who else?
Yeah.
This is Farah. I think this week has been pretty good. I don't know if I have anything specific to celebrate because it's only Wednesday. But, I think my husband and I are kind of dealing with things a little bit better when there's mishaps or we feel like we're taking a step back, we kind of rebound a little quicker. So I guess that's good.
Yeah. Great. Joy, what about you?
I guess what we've been celebrating, my son just had his birthday, so it was good to have family here and see him playing with friends and getting along and kind of rolling with the chaos of everything. So it was a good day.
Awesome. Perfect. Okay, so where, Joy, do you know where you want to take aim for our conversation?
I'm not sure. I've been actually thinking about it today and trying to figure out what I was thinking about.
You want to think out loud a little bit and I'll help you figure it out?
I think this is, you know, the non-judgment and, you know, not getting frustrated and accepting where he's at is something that I think I really struggle with. And now that he's getting older, he just turned 7, like, I think he's more aware that he does things he doesn't know why and it's hard or, you know, for one reason or another. And But I'm just, it feels overwhelming to just stop judging or not wanting him to do what I want him to do. I'm kind of at a loss on where to start.
So are you saying that you're not sure kind of how to feel about his behavior? Is that what you're describing?
I guess, you know, I think, you know, for me, some days and some times are better than others. Like, I can wade through everything that I've learned and have been learning and be like, okay, I see where this is coming from. But then there's other times where, especially when he's been able to do something before and then he can't another time, that it's very hard for me to accept that and not get upset or be frustrated or and you know, and sometimes feel bad because I know that he knows that I'm upset and so he's frustrated.
So I can't tell. Are you do you feel like you shouldn't be getting upset because you know that he's, even though sometimes he can't do things and other times he can, it's not something he's doing on purpose? Or do you, I mean, I guess the question is it about managing your frustration or is it really about the fact that you think the situation is different when he's been able to do it in the past?
I think it's both, which is why I feel like it's complicated of not knowing where to start.
Yeah. So I'm going to challenge you to start with your frustration with him not following through, particularly when he's been able to do things at other times. Does that feel like the right place to pay attention?
I feel like it's as good as any, you know, because it's a big area. So I've got to, I need to start somewhere. But like I said, that's why I kind of felt like I just didn't know. This is one of those things that I just don't know.
I think if you get really clear on what you want your mindset to be in that moment, that it's going to mm-hmm. help you to problem solve in that moment very differently, right? So if you decide, okay, I want to be in a, we're going to talk about non-judgment today. So it's like, I want to be in a complete place of non-judgment and see what happens. Or I want to hold the line and say, no, this isn't okay. You know, so it's like you can kind of, once you figure out kind of where you want to be on that continuum, it's going to help you to figure out how to take action. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Somebody from Oklahoma just joined us. Who's that?
Yes, Mary from Tulsa.
Hi, Mary from Tulsa. How are you today?
Great, thank you.
We're doing, we did check-ins, and we're doing, we're figuring out where to take aim. So if you want to go ahead and just check in and give us a sense of what you're celebrating, and then where you want to take aim today.
As far as celebrating, I think we had kind of a disappointing experience for my daughter in that there was a party that we didn't want her to go to. And that is kind of the most important thing in her world is her friendships. And she's been disappointed, but she has held it together in a way that I've never seen her do before. And so we've actually been able to have some conversation instead of just the yelling, screaming, crying.
Awesome. So what do you think is different this time, Mary?
I think some of it is her maturity, and some of it is her approach. Really, I mean, our approach, I think staying calm is making the difference and not, you know, jumping in on the emotion of it or taking things personally. Has made a difference about really trying to empathize, because I completely understand that if I were her, I would feel the exact same way. And I've really tried to let her know it's not been, you know, it's a really tough decision for us, because we would love for her to have all the happy feelings. But as parents, that there's, you know, our job is to protect. And so we can't always protect you and keep you happy, that we have to sometimes choose which one's more important to us at the moment. And so she's kind of understanding that, even though she's definitely not on board with it. We're actually having a bit of a dialogue. So that's hard, but it's been better than anything that we've ever had of that nature of, like, handling a disappointment, where in the past she's usually, she'll go for hours of just being upset. So we'll see when she comes back from school if that starts, but hopefully not.
Hopefully we'll continue
on that path.
So here's what I want to say, Mary, because you started with the way she was handling her disappointment, and what I want to celebrate mm-hmm. in addition to that is how well you're using that tool of compassion and the fact that you're seeing how it's really working and that it's really helping her. Because she gets that you get it, and that you're not just saying mm-hmm. no, I'm the mom.
Right.
Which I think is very powerful. Awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So Sarah, where do you want to take aim today?
I think I'm doing a good job of not trying to judge Lucas when he is nasty, and I'm trying to understand why he's doing it or what's going on. But I have noticed that I tend to judge my husband, who has ADHD, and when he jumps in and doesn't correctly, you know, say things that, or do things the way that I would necessarily do them, I'm having trouble probably more in that aspect, because I feel like we're both in two different stages of the process.
So, Sarah, do you mean, so to put it simply, I hear you saying that you're judging his behavior. Is it when he does something in particular, or is it when he doesn't do things the way you would do them? Where do you notice the judgment?
Yeah, both.
Why do you say you have to pick one of the two, I think, probably.
the one that would bother me more, I guess, is when he, like, for, I'll give you an example, yesterday, looked at Finn and Holt to his end of the deal after he watched television. He was going to go right upstairs, and he didn't, and he wouldn't give us his iPad. And Luke, my husband, was quick to judge him and say, oh, you're a backstabber, and call him, call him a name. And which, I got the frustration because I felt the same way, but I understood, the process behind it, in that area.
Okay. So does that feel, because I'm not in the midst of it, and it may feel really specific to you. I just want to double check that.
I'm sorry?
Does it feel specific to you?
Does it feel specific
does it
to
feel
me?
Specific, does it feel specific enough to you?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, because it's hard for me to gauge. It sounds kind of open, but you may have a couple of great examples in mind that really are make it easy for you to kind of take aim there.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Catherine, where do you want to take aim?
I really haven't had time to think about it. I've been sick for the last week.
Okay. Well, so do you want to just kind of float a little bit and ask permission to do that, or what do you want to do?
Yeah.
Do you want me to come back to you?
I will just kind of float and listen to other people. If that's
okay. Well, and by the end, I'm guessing, Catherine, that you're gonna have some concrete actions, even if you don't start with a particular situation in mind.
Yeah,
cool. Mary, where do you want to take aim?
Just glancing ahead at the non-judgment, this page. I think the thing that I most want to take aim at is my response to Bella concerning her hygiene. Well, and my husband as well. I know that it's normal for all kids to have trouble with hygiene. She hates to wipe and flush. And so it just, makes the whole family, we all have to see everything all day long. And then she smells. And so there's a part of us, that wants to take care of that. And to be honest, we don't want to have the reputation of having a kid that smells. But we don't want her to carry that either, where it's going to cause problems. And it just seems like something that is so basic that I know she knew when I potty trained her, so I feel like there's a little bit of a, had she mastered it, and then now she doesn't want, but we have really struggled, because I think we go back and forth from, just ignoring the problem, let it just resolve itself, eventually she'll find the motivation, to the days of just the frustration, and then I think we tend to fall into the guilting and shaming her, which I know that's not healthy. So trying to pick the appropriate response for things like that, I mean, that's a very specific one to work on that I think probably could be the most damaging if we handle it wrong.
Well, and I want to encourage you to worry less about the most damaging part of it, because that's an easy place to get into. Is that fear sort of, oh, I got to fix this, or I don't want her to feel, judged or shamed. But your instinct about kind of this balance between letting go and taking over, and particularly if you're doing it from a more of a critical place. Is strong, which is that, finding what's going to work. And so remind me, how old is she?
She is about to turn 9.
Nine. Okay. Awesome. Thank you. Okay. So today we are talking about non-judgment. And I want to open this up to the conversation about judgment of our kids as well as judgment of ourselves, because a lot of times, and I heard a little bit of this from a couple of you, which is this sort of, I must be a bad mom because this is going on, or if I was a better mom, this wouldn't be happening, or, kind of that sort of self self perspective when it comes to judgment. But the important piece around this is that judgment tends to get in the way in a couple of ways. One is that it can kind of it doesn't help our kids ultimately to feel judged. And a lot of times, even when we judge a particular situation, our kids have so many opportunities to screw up, frankly, that they end up starting to feel like they're bad and not that their behavior is unwanted, which is two completely different things. And when our kids get stressed out or their self-esteem starts to get impacted, you guys all know because you experience this every day, it makes it even harder to get our kids engaged. So it's much better to stay in a more practical sort of response, what you're noticing, what you're seeing, finding ways to not judge it. And I actually, it's funny because a lot of times I've had parents who have switched to being more just kind of neutral communication, but their kids still hear judgment in it because they can't, either their kids are self-judging or it's hard to kind of take that judgment out of our tone or out of our history. And so it can be a real barrier to relationships with our kids as well. If we can stay out of a place of judgment, here are the three things at the bottom of the page here. We can better identify what's going on for our kids. We can remain calm. And I think this is an important one because a lot of times if we get into that place of judgment or in a should or, oh my gosh, this can't be happening, we get into that more flight or fight mode and we're like, oh my gosh, I got to take care of this right now. We get the urgency kicks in and our problem solving really decreases. And so our ability to kind of be creative and think out of the box, which is really a lot of what our kids need, is more limited if we get into that place of more frantic judgment or even stern judgment. And I think ultimately the other piece of this is we all want our kids to feel loved and valued. And it's hard to know what our kids hear when we criticize their behavior. And even when we try not to criticize them, if that makes sense. So I think just kind of practicing non-judgment and helping our kids to feel, this kind of gets back to the naughty versus neurological. And, the conversation earlier about the fact that, you know, sometimes we know that it's, you know, there's neurological and then sometimes it's like, well, wait a second, you did this yesterday. Why can't you do it today? And the reality is that these kids, their behavior is erratic. And some days they're more stressed. Some days they're more distracted. Some days it's easier to do what they want to do or what we want them to do than it is on other days. And so it's very typical for kids to have behaviors that change over time or they get going on something and then they take a few steps back. And it's just that their behavior is really often all over the place. And it's hard to stay out of that place of judgment, either of themselves or of ourselves, if we feel like we can't handle it. So what comes up for you guys under this area of non-judgment?
That was everything that happened here last night, because I felt like my husband and I were both getting into that fight or flight, because we negotiated, we worked out a plan. He knew that he was watching the show and then going upstairs. And then when it doesn't work as you expect, then you're like, oh, now what? Like, now what do we do? Because, you know, you don't want to take things away and you don't want to cause any problems. But you're like, he's not doing his end of the deal. So, like, what is going on? So,
the post-it note on my desk that's like flashing at me right now is assume best intention. So if you were to assume that he wants to do well, and if he's not doing well, it's because something he's having a hard time from an executive function perspective, how would you handle the situation?
I tried to go into it that way, but it didn't seem like, honestly, like he was at his best intention, with his best intentions. But
let me interrupt you. What was it that he did that made you feel like he wasn't?
He snuck up his iPad and was was gonna watch a video instead of going to bed. When we agreed that he could watch a show, and then he could go to bed, not the iPad.
So because he was sneaking around, it feels like he doesn't. It feels like he's doing something malicious. I get it, and that makes perfect sense. So the question is not. So the executive function you wanted him to have in that moment was, oh, I know I want to use the iPad more than I want to do this other thing. And if I sneak around, I'm going to get caught. So I'm not going to sneak around. I'm going to do what I was asked to. As opposed to that impulse control that says, you want to use the iPad, that's all I can think about is using the iPad.
Right.
So when you take it back to that executive function, the part of his brain that remembers he's going to get in trouble or even remembers that mom told him not to may or may not have been completely kicked in.
I understand that. So how?
Yeah.
So what I did was I said, you know, we had a clear expectation that you were going to go to bed and you weren't going to play your iPad. And I said, can I have your iPad, please? And he said no, like he refused to give it to me. And I said, well, I'm going to walk away and let you think about it for a minute, because if you don't hold to your end of the deal, then I can't have you watch TV anymore because you're not holding to your end, so I can't hold to mine. And I walked away, and I thought he would put it down, and he didn't. And then that's when the fight or flight started kicking, and I was like,
yeah.
All right, well, he's not going to get his iPad. Like, he's not going to get away with it. Like, at that point, I felt like he was just taking advantage. Like, I give an inch and he takes a mile kind of thing.
Okay,
and then,
so hang on a second. So let's go back to that moment. So the question is, what was going on for him in that moment? And one of the things you identified that might be going on for him in that moment was that he really wanted to do it and he was just blatantly disobeying you, right? So that's one thing that might have been going on for him. What else might have been going on for him in that moment?
Well, he likes, you know, as I'm playing it back in my head, he likes to watch a YouTube video before bed. He says that, you know, it just, like, settles him down. And he usually does. He usually will watch one and then give it to me after the 10 minutes. But it wasn't, you know, in my head, it wasn't part of what we had agreed on. And now, instead of being a half hour past his bedtime, now it's, you know, 45 minutes, 50 minutes, and it's cutting into it. So I get, you know, as I'm talking to you, I understand where he is coming from, but I also don't, he has to understand also, I feel, that he can't always get what he wants, even though he's used to doing it on most nights. Not all nights, but, you know, a lot of the nights.
Then the question is that kind of, if he had come to you, if he had said, Mom, I changed my mind, I really want to watch a video tonight, can I?
That would have been different, because I know it does help him kind of unwind, and I know that he likes routine. Like, he likes to do his thing, and at night it's the worst time to say no, honestly. Like, I usually just I kind of don't take my battles at night, because I know it's just going to explode into something worse. So I would have said, okay, you know what? You have 10 minutes. If you're in your bed, you brush your teeth, everything is done like we talked about, then you can watch your video. But he didn't. You know,
so here's the question, is how realistic is it? So is that something he can do independently most nights?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, so I guess the question is, if you're rewinding, because part of this is about the fight or flight kicking in, right? And so if you had stayed calm, and how might you have handled that situation differently?
I could have went more the understanding. I understand that it helps you calm down and you like watching your videos at night. I'll let you you know, you can watch it for 10 minutes as long as you don't take advantage and give it to me so that we can chart it downstairs afterwards, or something like that.
Well, and so you might even engage in a conversation. And so the question is, if you ask him to pause the video for a minute, can you pause the video for a minute and talk to me for just a minute?
And probably wouldn't work with him at night. Like, he doesn't even let me interrupt the
trigger.
Video.
So he's pretty triggered. Yeah. Okay. So that's what's going on. Okay. So that's really what's going on, is you've got a triggered kid and then you've got a triggered mom. And so,
and my husband was even more triggered because he was like, oh, you're a backstabber. You can't be trusted. You know, like, it was, what should have been said.
Well, and so I think that's the piece of it, is that I always talk about the fact that there's two reasons to give consequences. And one is to send a message, and then the other is to help them to change their behavior, right? And so your instinct about not taking everything away from him was good, because it's not going to actually change his behavior, particularly if he's triggered. And making an agreement moving forward about how to handle it when you're triggered, you know, so it's that sort of getting agreement with him so that it's okay, that it's always okay for you to ask him to pause the video as long as you promise that he can finish watching what he's watching.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be an agreement you can make. Now, I don't know whether you can make that agreement. I would make that agreement because my kids don't watch, like, two-hour videos, right? But I might say, you know, I'm going to make a deal with you. If I come in and I need your attention, I want you to be willing to put pause on the video no matter what. And I will, if you'll do that, then I'll promise that I'll let you finish the video, unless it's an emergency. You know, so you reach that agreement when you're calm.
The challenge
ultimately is, what do you do when your kid is triggered and he's doing something other than focusing on triggering and unwinding from the trigger?
Yeah.
So how much are you judging yourself for the way you handled it last night?
I really didn't judge myself until now, until I'm talking about it. I judged my husband more. You know, I got on this case for calling him names, and you know, I told him, I asked him if he could have handled that a different way. I did not, you know, looking back on it, I could have handled it differently too. And I did. I guess I did more judging of everyone else. You know, I judged Lucas for not, you know, for taking instead of giving.
Well, and that's a lot of times that's what's coming up for me as you're saying that. A lot of times that's what happens when we get triggered. When we get triggered, we go to black and white thinking, which is, this is right or this is wrong. And so that's why the trigger management becomes an important part of this, is to say, okay, so let me take a few deep breaths here and figure out how I really want to handle this. Is this the end of the world? Is this an emergency? Do I need to respond as if this is a crisis? Or can I calmly handle this situation? That sort of thing. So what's coming up for the rest of you? Oh, go ahead.
No, you're right. That's what I need to do, because once it's bedtime and it gets past that bedtime, I get more into that, the fight and flight, because I'm like, oh, he needs to go to bed. Like, otherwise it's going to be, you know, worse.
You get scared, and you're like, oh, my gosh, he's going to be up, and it's going to be late, and then you're catastrophizing about tomorrow morning, and he's not going to have enough sleep, and tomorrow's going to be terrible, and I'm exactly. And that's a really normal thing to do, because, you know, we all know what the story of the nightmare morning is like, and we've all lived there. So what's coming up for everybody else?
This is Joy. I know for me that it's nighttime. Like, I know that my ability to parent positively and not let judgments creep in is connected with as the sun goes down, because things just get harder for him. I think it gets harder for everybody, because you're trying to get through dinner and, you know, all the evening routine, and it just, and that's, if I really think about it, that's where I start to go downhill and he starts to go downhill, and then there we are.
So what do you want to do instead?
I really want to make that experience more fun and less stressful.
Okay.
That's what I would like to do.
So is there, so how easy is it for you to bring a little bit of humor into a conversation?
Pretty easy. And, you know, I've used that to diffuse things in the past if I can still have my wits about me enough to realize that I am being triggered. And if I just make a joke, then, you know, my son will laugh and then it's all over. Or at least, you know, it doesn't erupt into something. But I've got to figure out that, you know, just like, you know, him losing control at times, like, myself with, you know, when I know that I'm about to get to the point of super frustration, how do I remember to walk away or take a deep breath or add in a joke before I say what I will regret saying later and then judge myself.
Okay. So is it about giving yourself some grace because you know that we all get triggered, or is it about being more conscious when you start to get triggered so that you can avoid the deep end, or something else?
I think it's both, and I think that they're connected, because if I could start to see when I'm starting to get triggered better, you know, then I wouldn't have to be giving myself grace on the back end so much, because I wouldn't hopefully be saying things that I didn't want to say, or being upset because something didn't, you know, go right, or, you know, whatever the cliche is. So
go back to that moment. So what do you do in that moment?
You know, usually it ends up being some kind of, like, you know, yelling, like, you know, I've asked you to do this 10 times, you know, you need to get it done, and then he'll, you know, get it done. But then I know that, you know, he's not happy, I'm not happy. We, you know, why do we have to be, you know, neither, I don't want to yell, he doesn't want to hear me yell. So how do we, that's my struggle, is like to, I want to yell less, laugh more, and not feel so critical about getting things done the way I think they should be done, or and having more understanding, and I'm working on understanding him and where he's coming from, and what his abilities are and how they change, you know, because, yeah, what he does great guns in the morning getting things done, but at night, you know, it's like pulling teeth.
Well, and so it, knowing that that's the reality, it sounds like you can have compassion for the fact that it's not on purpose. It just happens to be the way that the energy level goes that time of day.
Mm-hmm.
Other thoughts? I'm going back to your whole hygiene piece of this, because I think that that's one of those ones where it feels like it's kind of black and white, and you've tried ignoring it, you've tried letting it go. I guess the thing that's kind of popping into my head based on what we were just talking about is, you know, is there a subtle lightness or humor or playfulness that sits, you know, that kind of is in between this sort of letting it go and shaming and getting scared because, and I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to judge you for shaming because we all do that, but it's just sort of, you get into that black or white mode and it's like, oh my gosh, you stink. You have to remember to wipe. This is crazy, you know, and a really normal reaction. So I guess the question is, how able are you to have a conversation with her outside of the moment about the situation?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm mulling over, like just finding a neutral time, and I have to figure out when the best time is. It's one of those things, I feel everybody saying that nighttime is hard, and usually she most wants to talk when we're already past bedtime, and so, you know, it's like, oh, now you're receptive to talking, but it's going to ruin our day tomorrow. But one of the, I'm just thinking, you know, right now, I mean, the kids love poop emojis. Maybe I need to come up with something for a poop emoji.
Well, but here's the thing. What I would say is, so you're saying you don't want to ruin her day. So if it's a light conversation, I'm wondering whether it would ruin her day. So how aware do you think she is of the situation at all?
Yeah, I think ruining the day is more like if we stay up late talking, because she'd be most likely to maybe talk about it after. Because it's, I mean, she is always ready to talk at 10 p.m., but at that point, you should have already been asleep.
Got it.
But, okay, what was the other part of your question? I'm trying to think.
The other part of my question was, how aware do you think she is of the situation?
She claims to not be aware, which I think is part of our problem. She I get that she could be nose blind or, you know, whatever the case may be. She doesn't.
Or she might just completely be a working memory issue. She may just completely forget, right?
I think that she forgets. I don't, you know, there's a part of me that wants to believe it's a control thing, but I think she's just very absent-minded about all of that, and she's gotten into the habit of not doing something. And then she says, you know, everywhere she goes except for home is an automatic flush, so she doesn't ever have to flush except at home. So I think that, you know, I can understand that for her to have a chance to discipline herself to remember to do it, she doesn't have the motivation to do that yet.
Yeah.
And maybe
well,
the only
I guess
thing
I'm wondering,
that's going to
so
bring
there's,
that.
So there's a difference between... So in this situation, we go back to kind of the four roles of the parent. You know, so that, are we directing? Are we motivating? Are we supporting? Or are we troubleshooting? And in this instance, you're directing, right? Because you've got a health and safety issue for your daughter. You can see that she could have some social issues for her, and she's not aware enough to kind of take ownership yet. And so you're wanting to kind of take charge a little bit, if I get that right. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would love to fix it.
Okay. So if that's the case, so we go back to level one, to directing. You've got a child that you want to collaborate with, though. So you start with, you know, sweetie, I noticed that there are a lot of times where you forget to wipe and flush. What about it is hard for you? And see if you can get a response from her and see if she has any awareness of it. And she might just say, I just forget. Or I don't like to do it, or I'm in a hurry. Okay, so I'm forgetting. Okay.
Forgetting and being in a hurry, because we've gotten that far.
Got it. So she's forgetting and she's in a hurry. So great, sweetie, you forget and you're in a hurry. So what are three things that we might try that would help you to remember? And so maybe it's the little picture of the poop emoji. Maybe it's the don't forget to flush sign on the wall in front of the toilet. Maybe it's the... something on the back of the door. Maybe it's, you know, it's that sort of brainstorming with her to come up with ideas for how to help her to remember, because you're holding her accountable for the action, because you're saying it's really not okay. It's unhealthy and it's uncomfortable for the family. And I know you're not doing it on purpose. So what can we do collaboratively to help you to remember?
Right.
And maybe she needs a motivation is the other piece of it. So it's kind of like that sort of, hey, if I come into your bathroom every day this week and I don't find something in the toilet, then you can get, you know, maybe there's some kind of reward or incentive for her to do that. And she may need that sort of additional external motivation. So, again, you're back in role number one, which is you're directing and you're providing motivation yourself, because she's not engaged yet in solving the problem. If she was saying, I got to figure out how to remember and could own it, then you might be in that more stage two role where you're, you know, kind of helping her to engage. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, cool. All right, so other things that are kind of coming up on this area of judgment or any particular laser coaching that folks want today? Guys are quiet.
I feel like I always go blank when the time comes for questions.
Catherine, you've been really quiet. I've let you be quiet. You want to give us a two minute interlude here with what's going on for you?
I don't know. I think the whole hygiene thing. Before he wouldn't brush his teeth, but he now has braces, and so we get him to nominally brush, not always with toothpaste, but at least a cursory, brush your teeth. And we have gotten down to he has to take a bath or a shower twice a week because he doesn't care. The orthodontist showed him a YouTube clip on what would happen if you don't brush with their braces. So that was helpful.
You created a motive. So you used a little bit of fear as a motivator, and it worked in this instance.
Goes every 6 weeks to see the orthodontist, and every 6 months to get his teeth clean. So that is kind of taken care of. But the bath or shower, we have to schedule a time for her or to him to do that.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the piece of it is that a lot of times...
He's 12, so it's, becoming stinky.
It's hard to know when they're going to self-motivate over it. It's like I had a year that my son, showered every day, and then he stopped again. It really is just a whim sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about that fine balance between holding them accountable and making jokes when they don't, and in a way that doesn't help them, doesn't make them feel judged, gives them the space to do what they want. And so, it a lot of times you say, when today do you want to take a shower, and how do you want to remember? It's that sort of holding them accountable and giving them choices. Mm. So, cool. Other thoughts? We ended up on hygiene today. This is a good I never know where we're going to end up as a group.
I have a quick question. It doesn't have anything to do with hygiene, although Lucas has tons of issues in that area. I usually just tell him when he brushes his teeth, I just tell him, brush the teeth you want to keep. So that usually helps. But on a totally different point, we're having issues with him and this might be where I'm judging, when he doesn't get what he wants when we're talking, and it could be anything. Like he wanted to go fishing, so we took him fishing, and the day before he had mentioned he wanted to go to the movies, but he always picks the most inopportune times of like 9 o'clock at night, and he wanted to go to the movies. And I said, no, but if you want to go to the movies, we'll go tomorrow. And when he woke up, he said, Mom, I want to go fishing. Can we go fishing? I said, okay. So we spent the whole day fishing. And then, of course, when we got home, it was like 7 o'clock at night. He said, okay, I want to go to the movies now. I was like, well, you picked fishing over the movies. I said, listen, we're about to have a conversation. It may or may not go the way you want, but I just want to prepare ahead of time before we get out of our green that we're going to talk, we're going to try to compromise, but sometimes things don't go as planned. And it just doesn't seem to work, and I know there's a better way to say it. And I know you have a good way of words, because, of course, it blew up, and, you know, he lost it and was cursing and whatnot.
So hang on a second. Go back, Sarah. So what do you think happened in the moment? Do you think he forgot that you made the deal? Do you think that he wishes that he hadn't made the deal and he changed his mind because he didn't have as much fun fishing as he thought he would? Do you think that – what do you think really was going on for him in that moment?
I honestly think he wanted to do both and expected to do both without really being mindful of everything else that, you know, it's 7 o'clock that we have other – we have to eat, we have other – kids, we have to tend to other things. Like, I honestly think he had a great time fishing, so I think he just wanted to go to the movies.
Yeah, and so he was hyper-focused on the movies, and so I think that that's the piece of it is, you know, do you have a code word for him, or do you, or, you know, at what point did you notice that he got triggered? Could you have said anything, or did he already know that you were going to say no?
I think he already said no when I was kind of, like, startled when he asked me. When he said, can we go to the movies? Like, the movies? Like, you know, I responded like that. So I think, you know, at that point he was already expecting that I was going to say no. And then as soon as I said, well, you know, Lucas, and I try not to do the logic and the reasoning, because I remember that you spoke about that. And I said, honestly, Lucas, we got to go fishing, and that was our thing for today, and I have to go home and cook and do a lot of things. And that's when he started losing it. Oh, because then he would make excuses. Oh, you don't have to cook, or you don't have to do this, or you don't have to do that. And, you know, the answer to everything. And then I said, I'm sorry, we can't go to the movies today.
Yeah, so it sounds like what he really needed was some compassion. And in that moment, right? So that you're kind of saying, nope, we can't. And you're doing it really well. You're trying to stay calm. You're not saying, I told you so. You're not trying to do the logic. You're doing all that sort of thing. But my guess is he probably goes, wow. If you said something like, wow, it really would be fun to go to the movie tonight, and I'm sad that we can't, why don't we try to schedule something for later in the week? Just kind of connecting with him from a compassion perspective and saying, yeah, it's really kind of sad. We've had such a fun day. It would be fun to do something that's fun. Let's schedule something for Friday, or let's schedule something for Saturday. So it's that sort of, instead of shutting it down, find a way to make it be an almost yes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't do that. I don't do the compassion part. So I can definitely do that, because it turns more into, like, you know, more of the judgment back on the topic of judgment, like, like, really? Like, in my head, I'm like, really? Like, this kid, like, he doesn't get enough? You know, like, I feel like, well, all I do is, you know, for him. And it just feel like, can you be thankful for the one thing that we did? So, yeah, I could do that.
Well, and what's coming to mind, so I'm using a version of the 3-to-5 challenge, Sarah. So I'm, like, imagining the little kid who, like, do you ever do one of the games where you, like, throw your kids up in the air and they go, again, 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 and it's like they never want you to stop. They just want to do more and more and more and more, and it's like it doesn't matter what happens. It's like they're so in the moment and so thinking about the fun and the enjoyment that the part of them that goes, oh, wait, we can't do this, just isn't kicked in. And so taking that moment and going, wow, I had a really fun time today too, and I can't wait to do something else fun with you. Let's figure out when we can do that. You know, it's okay. That sort of staying in that moment and acknowledging the fact that they want to have fun. They want to enjoy it. I mean, my guess is he probably had such a great time with you that he wanted to do something more fun.
Yeah, I could definitely do the compassion, definitely. He didn't want me to fish with him, so I can't say that he had fun with me. But he wanted to go by himself. He made me go to the other end of the beach. So I can't say that he had fun with me, but he did have fun fishing.
Understood. But he did have fun fishing. Fair enough. So what do you need to do for us to remember to check the judgment?
Yeah, I don't know. I just need to take a step back before everything and just kind of get it ingrained in my head so that it becomes second nature. Take a step back, assume the best intentions and find some compassion. And I think, and when I do, you know, things are a whole lot different. So I just have to take a step back and do that.
Okay. Other thoughts, we're going to go ahead and wrap up and do our four questions. So any last-minute thoughts before we move into wrap-up? I'm on page 53. And the four questions we always ask are, what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway with an aha that I had? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? And I'm going to ask everybody to share at least one aha and an action commitment. And Catherine, I'm going to ask you to do this one too, okay? Sorry.
Okay.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first since I was just there, just to reiterate what I was saying. I'll just, my aha moment is to, well, not judge and assume best intentions and take a step back and figure out a game plan in my head as to, you know, to find compassion.
Love that. Awesome. Thanks, Sarah. Well,
I'll go next. I think... for me, a takeaway is that, like you said, behaviors are erratic and that they change from day to day. So I can't always count on that, so to speak. And so I need to be compassionate of that. And I think a realistic action step for me is to have some responses. So when things do get crazy at night when he's not doing what he's asked, you know, knowing that that's probably going to happen, have a response ready so that I don't get triggered or say something that I don't want to say.
So how hard is that going to be for you?
I kind of feel like I'm a consultant for a living, and I feel like I have to bite my tongue a lot at work, and so I should learn how to do that at home. So I think if I have something prepared, or at least, you know, have more forethought thinking going into the evening, knowing that, I mean, if we, you know, most of the time we're on the same loop, and I need to break that loop. So knowing that it's going to happen, you know, most nights, you know, I feel like I can be more prepared. Realizing that I'm playing the same evening over and over and over again because I'm doing the same things.
Well, that's a great aha. And I think that what's coming up for me as we talk about trigger management generally, it's like there's an opportunity that we can change things on our own. Like, it's like if you think about this, we talk about the escalation pattern. I don't know if I've talked about it in this group or not, but it's like when somebody starts to get triggered, if they go, wow, I'm starting to get upset, I need to calm down, they can calm themselves down. And then they'll get to a certain point where they may not be able to calm themselves down, but if somebody else says, let's take a break here, let's hang on a second, let's let's use one of our trigger management tools, something else, somebody else can help you calm down. Once you reach like the third level of escalation, most of us have to actually go over the top and kind of blow up before we can calm back down again. And so kind of knowing your own escalation point and knowing kind of how upset you're getting can be a really great tool to kind of figuring out how do I catch it early on enough so that I can do something about it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
We have the same problem with Tyler at night. And he doesn't want to do what he's asked to do. And it just escalates from there. I have to give myself a timeout. And he is unwilling to compromise or see that he needs to do what we ask. So I think for him, just taking a step back would be a good thing for him. David tend to be more vocal, and I tend to avoid, you know, engaging with him. Yeah.
What do you think he really needs in that moment?
Well, I think that someone what is going on is he doesn't want to go to bed. He is 12 and a half now, and he thinks he can stay up later, which his body is needing more sleep. And he doesn't understand or doesn't want to understand that portion of the whole dialogue.
Well, and I think that that's the piece of it. So my guess is, and this gets back to the trigger management, it's like and kids that are exhausted, their ability to reason is really low. And so I think that that's one of the challenges is that we try to reason with these kids, and they're just exhausted. And it's the same thing I was used to tease my ex-husband. It's like talking to a drunk, right? So if you're talking to an exhausted kid, it's like talking to a drunk. You just can't expect to have them reason in any sense of the imagination. Yeah. So, okay. Who else? Final checkouts. Who's left?
Oh, see, I haven't gone. This is Mary. I think my aha is probably as far as being triggered when you talk about going to black and white, and I think that's where my husband and I make the mistake. If we get into black and white thinking, I think those are the times that you start using the words like always, you always do this, or you never do this. And so it's no longer problem solving or empathetic or supportive. It's just judgmental. And so that's the moment that we need to try and avoid. And I think the realistic step is to come up with three ways on my own, three ideas that she could use, and then let her pick. Maybe she wants to do all three. Maybe she's got another idea, but at least come to having a conversation with her with some ideas in advance. Let her pick or come up with her own solution, and then talk about an incentive, see if there's something that she thinks is worth working for, and then find a way to track that. So I think that's what we're going to do next.
Awesome. Love that. Did I get everybody? Anybody not go?
I think there was Joy left.
Yeah, I was going to say Joy. I don't think I heard from you. Did I?
Yeah. I my big aha was that every evening is the same loop, and that I need to work on being, but my escalation before I get too far.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate it. Sorry, I'm like having a black hole moment. I apologize. Awesome. Oh. Great. Okay, guys. Great call today. We are, let's see, so the next group call is going to be the 23rd of May. And it's going to be the last week of school for us. So I'll be about to celebrate, and I'm sure other people will be as well. But have a great couple weeks. And the Lifeline call next week is on, hang on, Tuesday night at 8 p.m., so Tuesday the 15th. Talk to you all soon. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks so much.
Bye, everybody. Uh-huh.